Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Do you ever get a little down in life? Do you dream of that buff body but can't be bothered to actually do the work? Of course you do. We all hate ourselves a little bit. 30 minutes from now, you'll feel so comparatively intelligent, cultured, and generally superior that you'll wonder why you ever worried at all. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flats and Shanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of our very own podcast. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
All right, Tom.
All right, David.
How are you?
Good.
Well, I know how you are, but people at home don't know how you are.
I'm actually really good, mate. We've had a good day filming. Done a little bit of filming with Andy Powell for BBC Video online. So I've got a good buzz from that at the moment.
He was incredibly funny.
It was a very small cameo role, which took quite a long time to film because it was just so funny.
Yeah, so you guys can see it online, maybe not quite today, but maybe tomorrow. Long story short, we got Andy Powell of Golf Buggy fame on a golf buggy, and he pulls up to my car and knocks on the window, and as soon as he did it, I was just in bits, and I couldn't look at him without laughing. And everything he does is funny, so
it was a 10-second take, basically, which took 10 minutes.
Yeah, and it was... And then he drove off in the golf buggy, but he can't just drive off without being funny, so he does a donut in the golf buggy, and he...
Just ruining this golf club.
Just hilarious. It was genuinely hilarious.
Yeah. Wheels spinning off the grass.
I don't know what the video will look like, but it was very, very funny.
So what's funny to us, anyway.
What you been up to, mate?
Quite quiet week, mate. Six Nations games going on. A little bit of work. I also went and watched the Blues play Treviso, covering that game.
Cuthbert did all right, didn't he?
He did all right, yeah. He did pretty well.
I'm really happy to see him play well. Apparently, the word is that he called his Blues coach, Danny
Wilson. He did. He called him straight away.
Please, said, I want to play.
I want to play. He wants to get himself back on the horse, which is quite ironic, really, is because that was his first love and first sport.
Was it?
Horse riding. Took up rugby later on in life.
Okay.
Yeah. Love the horses.
There you go.
Gymkhana's, the
interesting,
lot.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's, he did well.
So he had a good game. We'll get into a little bit of detail later on, mate.
Yeah, okay,
mate. This is just the intro.
Okay, mate.
Let's not jump the gun too
much. Okay, mate.
What have you been up to? I know you're dying for me to ask.
Not a crazy week last week, but I went to the Savoy on Thursday night, because I always keep a suite at the Savoy. I keep a suite there year round. No, I don't. So I didn't even stay there, stayed down the road. But I went to the Savoy to host the Wasps quinquennial dinner to celebrate their sesquicentenary.
Now, I saw that because I follow you on Twitter, and I saw a lot of pictures being tweeted by the likes of Peter Scrivener.
Yep.
And the likes of Peter Scrivener. And that was it.
Yes.
But it looked really good.
I've worked really hard on remembering the two words quinquennial and sesquicentennial, and you haven't.
Is that Latin?
And you haven't asked me what either of them means.
May you use a lot of words I don't know the meaning of, but I'll just go with it.
Quinquennial is when you have a dinner every 5 years, like annual, biannual, quinquennial. And sesquicentennial is celebrating the 150th anniversary of something. Okay?
Is it Latin?
I think it's German. No, I think it's Latin.
You think or you know?
I think...
Well, I don't use words that I don't know.
I know what they mean. Really... Oh, you don't know the origins?
Yeah, of.
That's balls.
That's not.
You wouldn't know the origins. All right, what's the origin of the word the? What language did that come from originally?
Hebrew.
See, you haven't got a clue, mate.
Do you?
No, but I didn't say I did. That's the point.
English.
Anyway, so the Waspies dinner, and it was in... Had I hosted that dinner 4 or 5 years ago, it would have been genuinely brutal because it was carnage. I mean...
Who are the Wasp boys? Legends were there, boy.
Okay, so Big Lol, Paul Volley, Alex King...
Nice.
Will Green, Scrivener, Mark Denny, Fraser Waters, Josh Lucy...
Ah, Rob Andrew,
Dean Ryan... I mean, if you think of one... Simon Shaw couldn't come, actually, unusually, but he would normally have been there. Damien Cronin...
Rob Henderson
was there, loose.
Paul Sackey?
Sacks wasn't there. Kenny Logan was there. Lenny Cogan, he was there.
Gabby?
Chris Wright. Gabby wasn't there, unfortunately.
Prefer her, yeah.
Kenny stormed the stage and stole all my notes, obviously. It was just carnage in there, and you wouldn't want to MC it, except I loved it, because it's just, you know, people, you get up on the stage to talk about stuff, and no one wants to listen to you because they are smashed. There was a food fight at 8:30.
But I suppose, you know, it's a catch-up for those boys as well.
That's all it is, yeah.
Andy Gomersall?
Gomers, no, wasn't there, was somewhere else. But it was just...
Matt Dawson?
No, you're just naming people that weren't there now, but it makes it sound like nobody was there, but it was actually brilliant. Okay. It's professional and amateur era, isn't it? Amateur club. Amateur club is brilliant. Really, really good dinner, really good fun. And Dave Trick, who is the Bath Rugby president and thereby a mate of mine.
I know him well, yeah.
Experienced after dinner speaker.
Yep.
I sat with him and he was on last of all, and it was a packed schedule of this dinner. And it was so loose. Everyone was so pissed and loud and leery. I just looked at him and said, are there any environments that are worse than this to be a guest speaker and going on at 11 o'clock or 11:15 in the end? And he said, no. Been doing it 50 or 40 years. No, there are not.
Really?
This is as hard as it gets.
Did he Jimmy nail it?
Jimmy nailed it. I say this to you now.
Please do.
I can't remember an after-dinner speech that held a room that well and went that well. It was an absolute masterclass.
Better than me?
No.
Okay.
Except you.
Yeah.
It was an absolute masterclass, and it made the night.
He's an incredibly funny bloke, mate. He tells great story about... I'm sure he's probably the only person to smoke a cigarette during an international game.
Oh, and have a can of beer?
Yeah.
Can of beer and a cigarette on the touchline.
Was it his brother was watching?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
And it's a true story. So yeah, I spoke to him afterwards and said, you know, they all say it's true. Is it true? He said, yeah, it's absolutely true. Playing for England under-18s, I think, or something. And it was so foggy that his brother and his mate were standing having a pint at Twickenham and didn't realise they were on the pitch having a cigarette. Brilliant. And they said, hey, tricky boy.
What are you up to this weekend, mate?
This weekend, old chap, I'm going... Oh, by the way, I went to Sale on Sunday. Sale Sharks.
ITV
highlight,
one.
And when they
ITV
beat...
ITV 1 highlights?
They beat Wasps. ITV 9 highlights. And
one's better.
Really good game, but that doesn't sort of make it okay that it took me 3.5 hours to get there and 5.5 hours to get home.
Oh, why?
And I haven't been to Sale in the last two seasons where it's taken me less than 5 hours to get home. It's just a hellish place to get out of. And I'm glad, I'm happy for Sale that they won, but I resent that journey. So contractually, we have to go to every club once. And I think we've now been to Sale twice, and we have not yet been to Bath, which is 8 minutes from my house. So it's starting to piss me off a little bit. I'm now thinking it's a running joke.
Yeah, so this weekend, what are you doing?
This weekend...
Closer?
I'm Northampton against... I want to say Worcester Warriors, because I think it is them, on Saturday with ITV. And then on Sunday, commentating on England-Italy, which would be really cool.
Brilliant.
And I'm going into the green room, which is Lawrence and Tins's corporate suite before and after the match for a bit of food and a couple of mineral waters. And Mark Durden-Smith hosts it, who is
and
just...
charity loose, talk, yeah?
Who's just loose. And just charity talk, yeah.
More charity work.
You're going to Murrayfield, I think, are you not?
Yes, I am. going up on the Friday morning, up on the plane.
Just supporting the boys,
Didn't fancy walking.
Super fan, is it?
Yeah, didn't fancy jog. Yeah, no, going up to see the boys, aren't I? Mad taff.
Balls.
Can't wait.
Are you not getting paid for corporate then?
I might do a little
bit. Right, okay.
If it crosses my path, I might do a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Silver crosses my palm.
Yeah, it sounds tough, doesn't it? Do you know what I've got to do after the game finishes? Go back to the corporate suite, get out of Twickenham about 7. I've got to drive to Dartmouth in Devon on Sunday night. That's going to be a solid 4 or 5 hours.
I think I'm
doing
a wooden spoon dinner on the lunch on the Friday afternoon and then heading over on the Saturday.
You just love charity, don't you?
To watch.
But you're the sort of guy that will forego your fee for the wooden spoon. You'll give it back. You'll say no fee,
heading
won't
over,
you?
Heading over to Murrayfield, then at 11 o'clock, 11 till 5 my working hours, doing some stuff with Nicky Walker.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Ospreys winger.
Yeah,
ex-Ospreys winger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Son to Murray.
Yeah.
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 Brother of Nigel.
Yeah, stepbrother of Gary Lineker. Oh, no, that's a different thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So, looking forward to that, mate.
Yeah, but you have a great time, mate, weren't you? Super
massive
fan.
Game.
Yeah.
Massive
oh,
game.
Oh, huge, yeah.
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 So, anyway, mate, what's on today's podcast?
Well, we are at the Vale Training Centre, the Welsh... Is that what you call it? The Welsh place?
It's called the Vale Resort, mate. In
the Vale of Glamorgan.
In the Vale of Glamorgan, and it is.
We are in the boardroom.
It's the training base for the Welsh team.
Yeah, we are in the boardroom just off reception, which is very nice. And when you popped out for wee wees just now, I did find some stem ginger biscuits in the corner. Knocked a couple of packs
sniffed
off.
Sniffed them out, didn't you? But there's a reason why we're here, David.
Tell them. Tell them.
We will be interviewing Warren Gatland later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, about all things Lions.
And just so you know, he is going to reveal his starting team and his captain. That is almost 100% guaranteed.
We're not sure yet, but we're hoping we can announce the Lions squad live on this podcast.
Yeah. I know he wants it to work that way. It's just sponsors and, you know...
It's Land Rover.
Suits, isn't it?
Yeah, it's standard life.
So, looking forward to talking to Warren Gatland. And we're going to talk about some stuff. I mean, we got so many questions this week. We're going to try and get through a couple more.
How can they get in contact with this boy?
Email contact@flatsandshanks.com, Twitter @flatsandshanks, Facebook @flatsandshanks.
Make sure, if you download on iTunes, review us, give us 5 stars, nothing less. That's the bare minimum.
Yeah, it's like, why would you... If you log on and don't give us 5 stars, you log on to say something more negative than 5 stars, you're effectively an internet troll, all right? Are you happy being an internet troll? No. So why don't you go on?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm going to say nice things, yeah? So here we are at the Vale Training Resort. Warren Gatland, head coach of the British and Irish Lions, has been here watching a Welsh session in absolutely horrible weather conditions, but probably quite like New Zealand, so probably quite handy for you to watch that. But anyway, we are in the glorious Vail Resort boardroom with Warren Gatland. Gats, welcome.
Thanks, lads. You know, it was a bit windy out there. I tried to stay in undercover for as much as possible, but conditions weren't great. But
yeah, I noticed you were dry as a bone when you walked in, talking about how wet it was.
That's Mike Ruddock tactics. That's what he used to do when he was coach. Just stay in the car if it was raining.
In the car on the touchline.
Just shout instructions out the window.
Yeah, I'm just an observer at the moment, so...
On that, it's kind of, I guess, it's interesting for us because we know you're the head coach of British and Irish Lions, and you'd assume that makes it a really busy year, this year in particular, leading into the tour. But is it really busy, and kind of almost, why is it busy? What are you up to, and what are your weeks look like these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think people would be amazed that the stuff that's keeping me busy at the moment is looking after all the sponsors, really. I mean, you sign up QBE, Standard Life Investments, obviously the main sponsor, Canterbury, Land Rover, a number of smaller sponsors. And so the week's kind of covered, a number of days in the week, sort of looking after the commitments that we've got to them and the Lions have got to them, where they've given me so many days. And then, you know, one of the other things, which I think is a great idea, is that we've committed to one charity in each of the home nations, so that's four charities, and we've committed to 3 days for each of the charities, so that's 12 days of my time as well. So, you know, the stuff at the moment's been, you know, incredibly busy during the week, and then you're trying to watch a little bit of rugby, and in terms of on the laptops going over games, and then in the weekends at the moment, watching games in the weekend. So next week, or this weekend, I'll be up in Edinburgh watching Scotland and Wales, and then down to London on the Sunday, England and Italy. So pretty busy, really.
Is it just the Six Nations games you're watching, or are you watching a lot of club rugby as well?
Been watching a bit of the club rugby on TV at the moment, which is just recording them or getting to see the analysts and getting the games off them as well. So pretty much just the Six Nations at the moment, and then looking after the Six Nations, obviously there'll be a few important games to have a look at before we start to really narrow down and finalise the squad.
In terms of the Six Nations, how much contact are you having with the sort of Four Nations coaches? Are they ringing you, or are you ringing them?
No, well, I think one of the things that decided to do is that I didn't want anyone, you know, whether it was myself or anything from the Lions, to be, say, there was a distraction. So I've really left the other coaches pretty much their own devices and just say, look, your roles at the moment is to concentrate on the Six Nations, to really have that as your focus. We sat down with the announcement of the coaches and we sort of went through the autumn campaign and just went through all the four squads, basically, and kind of discussed the players, the ones that we thought were in contention, the ones that we thought were maybes, and others that we thought, you know, maybe weren't quite ready at this stage for the Lions. And, you know, we've done that. So the whole focus has really been on allowing them to do their jobs, which is important. And then, but I'm having an opportunity to go and to have a look and spend a day with the four teams. And I think that's quite important. And I tell you why it's important is because one of the things that I found from 2013 is that, you know, certain teams do operate things a bit differently. And I'll give you an example to that, is that England and Wales are quite similar in the way that they train. They'll have, say double sessions on a Tuesday and Thursday where they do conditioning or weights and units, and then do the rugby in the afternoon, where Ireland's a little bit different, where they might do their weights in the morning and then, you know, sort of one session in the afternoon where they'll incorporate their units and the session, which is a little bit longer than or train for a bit longer than the other nation. Now, what happened in 2013 is that when we tried to sort of, you know, do the couple of sessions and that, and it's not that the Irish boys, you know, they're fit and everything, but when you're not used to sort of doing two sessions a day, sometimes it's just the body coping with the demands and, you know, something that you're unfamiliar with. So, you know, we had to pull back a little bit in 2013. So going around and having a look and talking to the coaches about, you know, how they're running their week, what they're doing, what's the stress load, trying to get a little bit of information about some GPS numbers and the intensities of training, you know, the volume they're doing during the week. But, you know, that information is powerful for me to make sure that, you know, when we go to New Zealand, we're trying to replicate stuff. We're not trying to overload certain number of players, because the thing with this is that with two games in a week and trying to fit in trainings, and the biggest challenge is trying to have days off. You know, how do you give players a little bit of a rest, a bit of time off during a Lions series in New Zealand? And so it's a real managing act that we've just you know, trying to get everything right, you know, from that aspect.
And I guess the first job is picking the side, and we'll talk about that in a minute, the squad. But one of the major jobs we always think from the outside of the sort of management team of a British and Irish Lions setup is touring party, is gelling those players together. So in your mind, is there one strategy that always worked or worked last time, so we'll do it again? Is it all about building rafts and crossing rivers and building teepees together? Is it all about sinking pints? Is it
bow and arrow?
Is that what you did?
Yeah,
we never did that. A bit of mud wrestling, that's what we did, private time. But is there a system in your mind that works of bringing lads together?
Mud wrestling, I never.
Yeah, heard. Or olive oil, depends what you got to add.
That's Greco-Roman wrestling.
It's a bath thing, mate.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, the key to it that I've found in speaking to a lot of ex-players and coaches that have been involved is that, you know, trying to get things right off the field. If we can get things right off the field, you know, in a coaching setup, you can't keep every player happy, and you're always going to have certain players that are going to be a little bit upset or disgruntled. They feel like they haven't had an opportunity. But if you can get sort of that harmony as close as possible off the field, I think you've got a chance of getting things right on the field. So, again, you know, that's, we're looking at it. The preparation time that we've got is pretty limited. We've got a couple of four-day camps. We've got 4 days here in Wales, I think, from the 14th of May, and then a camp the following week. But that'll be only with probably half the squad, because the players that are involved in the finals, the Premiership final, the Aviva final, they won't be in camp at all. So the first time we're really together as a squad is we come together on the Sunday after the two finals. We have a leaving dinner in London. We fly to New Zealand on the Monday. We arrive on the Wednesday, and the first game's on the Saturday. So,
oh, wow,
that's the big thing. You know, how do we put together and get a team together in 2 or 3 days or within the first couple of weeks? So, you know, that first game is that, you know, what we've decided to do. We're travelling out to Whangarei and on the Friday. The game's on the Saturday, and then we go to Pai here on the Saturday night. And, you know, I've just said, look, it's probably a good opportunity to for the guys just to, you know, have a couple of quiet beers that night when we get up there. You know, it'll be reasonably late, and then we've got a recovery day the next day on the Sunday. And so, look, spending some time together, I think it's always the best thing, without being stupid, of course, and guys having a few pints. I mean, we haven't got time to do sort of that team building exercises, and most players have done that sort of thing.
Done it to death.
Yeah. Yeah, and once you've done it 2 or 3 times, you know, you get bored of it, and it kind of, it doesn't have the same appeal. And then, you know, it's cyclical in terms of, you know, if you didn't do it for 4 or 5 years, and you might throw that in as a pre-season thing to do with a team if players haven't experienced that sort of thing. So
yeah,
you know, that's a challenge for us. Is just how do we get those players together? And, you know, the thing with, I think, guys rooming together, you know, mixing the rooming lists up, guys trying to get to know each other as quickly as we possibly can, putting committees together.
Have you thought about getting Andy Powell and Mike Phillips in, just purely for morale? I mean, that, you know, just get them on the front of the bus or in a room.
Yeah. I tell you, that's, and for, you know, not just talking about those two guys, but one of the things that I'm seriously thinking about is, you know, getting the right people on board. And there might be one or two players that, you know, have been around a bit, who have experienced, who are great in a team environment.
Talking about us.
Exactly.
This is
your interviewing for...
I bloody knew it as well. I knew it.
Yeah. You know, that the conversation with them might be, look, probably at this stage, I don't see you as a test player, but, you know, with injuries or if your form's good enough, you know, you might get an opportunity, but you could be incredibly vital to us as part of bringing a group together, you know, helping with committees, you know, whatever the committees are. And if everyone's on a committee, and, you know, those are music committees and...
Laundry.
Laundry, fines committee, entertainment, you know, whatever, a senior player group. And you know, one of the things that we've got to do, which is kind of going to be challenging for the first week or so, is that we're looking at having a welcome, and whether that's in Pai here on the Sunday at Waitangi on the grounds there. So part of that is that, you know, we're probably, I'm looking to, and we want to do it properly, so we'll have someone hopefully respond in English, which is probably John Spencer, the manager. I'd like to get a Welsh speaker respond in Welsh, say if someone speaks Irish as well, and maybe a Gaelic, you know, if there's anyone from Scotland who can speak that. Probably not going to be anyone from Scotland who can speak
Glasgow,
Gaelic.
Glasgow, yeah. You can't understand them.
Yeah, basically German, mate. Yeah.
But the issue is that every time you speak, you've got to sing, you've got to respond to a song. So probably the first couple of weeks of the squad being together, you know, I'm going to put some songs together and we'll be having choir practice every night. And maybe that's part of, you know, bringing the squad together, because, you know, we've got to do those things right. And I've been trying to think, it won't be my decision, it'll be the players' decision in terms of, you know, possibly what could the songs be that we sing. And so, you know, maybe from an English point of view, you could, you know, Jerusalem's probably is pretty universal. It's a great song. Maybe Fields of Athenry from an Irish perspective. Callan Land from Wales. And, you know, if you want a Welsh aspect to it, Scotland, I don't know, maybe the Proclaimers. Like,
it's a good one. Or you just make up a song like Clive Woodward did in 05.
I don't know if that'll go down quite so well. So, you know, you could do Delilah or something. I don't know. But, so, you know, having a song represented from each of the four home nations that the players pick, that they're happy with, that we, you know, that we learn properly, and that we, you know, can do in a Pōwhiri in terms of a welcome, a Māori welcome.
The Lion Sleeps Tonight could be a good one, couldn't it?
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah. How does that go?
I can't see it.
No. Yeah. Watch
The Lion King.
Yeah, come on. We're singing. If we're going to let's sing. A Woomba.
Just on terms of the Six Nations Scats, do you do what we do and pick like a starting 15 after every game? Or
no, I don't.
No, you don't?
No, I don't. Oh.
So you don't pick a captain?
No, but I've seen a few starting 15. You know, teams, you know, everyone's got a team of the week, haven't they? And that kind of changes.
Our flats does all the time.
From
really
week
nausea.
To week. And I find that stuff interesting. And I know there's an app on the Lions website where I was with EY last week, and I was taking through the app, and they were showing me, said this is the most popular starting 15 for the, you know, the tests. And when I looked at it, it wasn't too far away from, you know, probably what was in my mind. I mean, I haven't gone through that process, and I actually thought, you know, it's not a bad.
So you don't have in your mind now this is roughly what my 15 looks like. It's too early for you to have gone through.
Yeah, look, I don't go through that process. I think, you know, it's a matter of picking the squad, and then I don't want to be too prescriptive in terms that, you know, we'll pick a squad, and then we talked about, you know, like getting things right off the field, and one of the things in it, you know, the challenges, the tough games, and trying to get a team together for, you know, before the first test. But I will, one of the things I'll say to the players is that everyone who goes on tour will get a start in the first three games. Now, if you're a player and you know you're going to start one of the first three games, well, at least you feel like you've been in the shop window. At least you feel like, hey, I've had a chance here, and then. And I think that's important, you know. And like, you know, probably if you're being completely selfish or whatever, then you might start picking a number 115 a little bit earlier than that. But then, like I said to you, you know, players want to feel a part of it. You know,
they won't lose interest, will they?
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you want to keep them on tour as long as possible. And the last thing that I want is, you know, guys going on tour feeling like they're just here holding bags and making up the numbers, because you really want to feel a part of it. And if you feel like, hey, I started in one of the first three games and I play well enough and the team performs well, I've got a chance. And that's, you know, as an ex-player myself, you know, if I had that opportunity, I think, well, fair enough, you know, at least I've been given
a proper crack at it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
One thing that interests me is I remember talking to Gary Gold when he was the DOR at Bath, and he just mentioned to me that day he was meeting Stuart Lancaster, who was England coach then, and he said, now Lanny doesn't want to pick this guy and this guy from the Bath team, but He said, you wait. When he leaves here today, he'll be picking them because he doesn't know them. You know, I'm going to sell them in, effectively. Do you have any contact with the head coaches of the four home nations at the moment? How much contact do you have, if any? And is it about them answering questions and giving feedback, or is there any of this selling in of their players as the best guys?
Yeah, they haven't. I've spent a day in with Ireland at the moment. You know, I've spoken to Rob on a few occasions from a Welsh situation. They haven't had any selling at the moment in terms of player. I mean, probably the only selling point was Joe Smith, you know, ringing me and saying, you know, about Andy Farrell and what a great job he's been doing in the Irish setup. So, in terms of the players, no, there's been no push. I think when we start getting a little bit closer, we'll have just been letting them do their job in the Six Nations. Probably when the Six Nations finishes, is having that conversation about, you know, potential players that we are looking at, and is there anyone we've missed out on the list, or is anyone that they're going to push? And I think that's going to be important. You know, there's three nations that are reasonably well represented. You know, unfortunately, we haven't got anyone from Scotland, so, you know, it's either ringing Vern or one of the assistant coaches, or maybe Gregor or something like that from a Scottish perspective, and maybe even, you know, I spoke to Andy Irvine a couple of weeks ago, you know, just inviting someone from Scotland to come in on a selection meeting, you know, so that they, you know, there's at least a voice from Scotland that, you know, someone's giving some input and potentially pushing some of their players too.
Now, Gas, I want to take you back to your time with Wales and being Welsh coach. Now, obviously, I played underneath you for a few years while you guided and shaped us and nurtured us.
You wouldn't tell the story about your 50th cap. You
know? Well, I'm going to ask you about that in a minute.
It's my favourite. But after a big win, and you sort of gave the call to the boys, right, you can go out, you can relax, you can have a couple of drinks, who were you most worried about the next day? Because we had the Fab Five, didn't we?
Yeah, Fab Five, yeah, and the Ospreys boys, wasn't it?
You know, so it was Shane, it was Hookie, it was Bernie, it was Mike Phillips, and it was also Gaff, wasn't it?
The Tans on those boys.
And JT was a...
Yeah.
They could go, maybe six of them. Sometimes there was only five of them involved. Yeah,
six. So,
do you remember I had a little wrestle with him in Wexford before?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. We pulled apart. All I'm saying is I came out on top.
And that's right, I forgot about that.
Who are you most worried about?
Filsy was always a bit of a thing, you know. What's the story about Filsy, you know, hopping on the plane and...
Oh, yeah.
And the hostess says, excuse me, sir, are you business class or economy class? And he turns around and says, love, I'm world class.
But he meant it, though.
He did.
That wasn't a joke.
No, I know.
He absolutely meant it.
The most confident person you've ever met in your life, you know, that believed 100% in his own ability.
And sometimes you thought he was joking, but he never was.
No,
was
he wasn't joking. He was serious about it. You know, he thought he was the best. And that was why, you know, when he did play well and he was at his best, he was such a competitive...
I remember the 2009 tour, he was incredible, wasn't he? Finished off the tour at centre, I think.
He did, at
some stage. But
You know, they were always... In those days, you know, we used to employ three security guards to go out with the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, we used to employ them. The game is, you know, the last 4 or 5 years has definitely changed. You know, most of the players during campaigns wouldn't drink now, and maybe at the end of a campaign they'd have a few beers. So, you know, they don't really go out after games. You know, they might have a few beers in the hotel now, but very rarely go out after games. Sometimes, a couple of times, maybe in the autumn, once in the autumn they might go out, but, you know, in those times we used to employ security guards, and I can remember having a debrief on a Sunday with one of the security guards after and said, you know, how was it last night? And he said, oh my God, he said, these guys are in a league of their own. I said, what do you mean? He said, I've looked after the movie stars, I've looked after the, you know, musicians, I've looked after footballers, looked after, you know, other celebrities, but these guys are in a league of their own when they go into town. So I didn't have to ask too much. So
yeah, let's leave it there. I want to talk about the day Shanks got his 50th cap, because the version I've heard, and I really hope it's true, is that you basically gave a talk to the lads at the hotel and you said, Shanks, anyway, before the test match, Shanks, it's your 50th cap.
You know, he asked me first if I wanted to lead the team out, and I, of course, I said yes, couldn't wait.
Oh, yeah, excellent. And then you said, you know, do you want to lead the team out? Yes. Then it was, you know, when I was at Wasps and you were at Sarries, I didn't rate you. But you're still here. Right, let's go on the bus. That's kind of how I am.
Well, no, it was a bit more than... I just said to him, you know, to earn 50 caps and the player he had turned to, I just added a huge amount of respect in terms of what he achieved. But look, when he was at Saracens, I didn't rate him at all, you know. So, and amazing how times have changed because, you know, we used to...
spurred me on, mate. Yeah, scored a try as well, that
you
game.
You did. You played brilliantly. Yeah, oh, yeah, look, you were fantastic for us. And
stop it.
You know,
I'd say he's blushing, but yeah, he's just going more see-through.
Yeah, you know, things have changed in terms of, you know, we used to use Wasps, you know, Saracens used to be a sort of benchmark by how much we beat them by, you know, how well we were going in the season. Yeah, so things have turned around a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit. But I always thought, because I played with Shanks for a bit, and I always thought that his first few cats, people didn't know what was coming. He wasn't a huge guy, especially up top, so he was a lot stronger than people thought. But I thought after 25, 30 caps, I thought I'd probably be about it because there's not a lot else there. And I always think because he achieved 70 caps, it was either a great achievement
or 70 caps,
mad, isn't it?
Thanks, mate.
Or you were sitting there as head coach, thinking, watching all the games at the weekend, thinking, someone please stand out so we can drop.
He's thinking. Right, Jamie Roberts is 15 now. three more years.
Yeah, I think you know, credit to you, Shanks. I think the best thing about you is that you got, you know, every little ounce out of you, and you were looking to get better. How do I get better? You know, we brought things in, we changed the way we defended, and you took that on board, and, you know, you were excellent, you know, a number of intercepts and stuff, and got up. So it was always about actually, you know, improving. It was a good example to other players about saying, you know, I'm gonna make the absolute most of my ability here and looking to get better and take things on board. And so, you know, that's why... You know, you did improve from your series days.
That's ruined it a bit.
It's basically what you're saying is I'm a hybrid.
That has actually ruined the interview a bit for me. That I hope it would finish on a negative.
Now, just we talked a lot about, you know, what you've been up to now. We're not going to keep you much longer, but what would you do to relax now? Because you probably don't get that much downtime.
Yeah.
You into box sets or anything like that?
Yeah, try and watch a little bit of TV and stuff and just sit back and... There's not much relaxing time at the moment. You know,
no.
That's the thing. You know, I remember someone saying to me, and it was something I never thought about really. You know, in terms of, there's actually some times that, you know, when you're involved in sort of elite sport or elite something, that you actually just need thinking time.
Hmm.
You know, just time to yourself where you're actually thinking about things and different ideas and you know, your own time. And I'd never really thought about that as being important, you know. And so I try and take that on board. And, you know, I'm always looking at different ideas and different things. And, I saw something the other day it was a Lions video session that someone showed me. It was a line out. And I thought, heck, that was quite special. And I thought,
was it Alex Dunbar's one?
Yes, it might have been. Yeah. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's good, wasn't it?
Well, I thought I'm going to keep that up my sleeve. And, you know,
if you're going to catch people.
Yeah. But I don't know if it's legal or not, but I have to be a little bit careful. I mean, it was a little bit of a special, different line out that might catch someone out, but, you know, so you might only get away with it once.
Yeah.
So you might only need to. Right, we ask all of our guests this when we have a guest. Have you got, if you had to give a book away as a Christmas present or recommend one book that you've read ever as your favourite, what would you say?
I don't know about the book I've read. A book I read recently I found pretty interesting. It was a book called I Am Pilgrim.
Oh, just read it.
I've got it to read.
I found it, you know, obviously, you know, pretty current really in terms of it sort of gives you a bit of a different insight into different views on terrorism and way things, you know, so... I found that really, really interesting, you know, and quite thought-provoking, so enjoyable book.
Coincidentally, Brian O'Driscoll came on this pod a few weeks ago, and that was his best book by a mile.
Right.
And he said he feels it's the only book he's ever read that he feels as a whole in his life since he finished it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. I really enjoyed it as well.
I'm one of those guys who go away on holiday and I'll take a book with me and I'll read it sort of in 3 or 4 days and then I might not read another book for another 6 months.
Yeah, you're a bloke basically.
So I tend to enjoy that on holidays and stuff, but Yeah, but I did enjoy that.
And here's, this is the final question.
Who's the captain?
Well, actually, since you're asking, I know. I think I know who it is. No, do you know who your captain is yet?
No, I don't.
You're not going to tell us who it is. You don't know who it is yet.
No, I don't. And I think there's some real quality contenders out there, and I think, you know, the media are, you know, obsessed with the captaincy, and but I think, you know, the first thing is to pick the squad first, and then look at you know, a potential captain, and if we're looking at as a captain, I mean, the ideal captain is that if you're picking a test team, you'd like to think he's got a good chance of starting the test team, but he'll still have the conversation. You know, look, this form needs to be good enough to be on tour, because you've got to probably realise that whoever's captain, there's going to be two or three other players potentially in his position. You know, so they look at it. You know, he gets announced as captain, and you know, potentially their heads may drop a little bit, thinking, oh, you know, that means there's a test place going on in my position. So. And I think the conversation with them needs to be, look, if your form's better than that player on tour, you know, I have no problem in picking you over, you know, who the tour captain, and someone else will, you know, captain the test team. I mean, we're going to need other players on tour to do that job as well. You know, two or three other players are going to be really important in terms of captaining the side in other games. And, you know, to whoever it is, it's going to be a massive honour. You know, it always is a huge honour, but, you know, it's not something that I, you know, focus too much on, and you know, I'll wait till the very end. And what I did last in 2013, and in fairness to Sam Warburton, I mean, I didn't speak to him until I think about the week before I asked him, because he was going to every press conference for, you know, every game he was playing at club, and they were, the first question was, you know, has Warren Gatland spoken to you? Was he asked you about Gatland? And he kept saying, you know, no, he hasn't spoken to me, because I hadn't, because I don't want to put whoever that person is in a position where he's, you know, having to hide something or lie to the media. I don't think that's fair on him. So, you know, whoever the captain's going to be, you know, he's probably not going to know until as late as possible. But I think that's fair on him, and, you know, without him having that sort of pressure. And, you know, it's but he, you know, I'll be in trouble if he says no to me. So
yeah, there is that. Yeah. Back up.
Yeah,
I'll do it, mate. Anyway, it should be Nathan Catt from Bath. Anyway, we all know that. Yeah,
no more questions now, mate. Gats, thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
Cheers, lads.
It's been a pleasure and very insightful talking to you.
And good luck. Thanks, Gats.
All right, cheers, lads.
That was Warren Gatlin.
Yeah, he's just left the room. Now, we finished the interview. As far as you know, this is seamless, but the interview finished 35 minutes ago.
Minimum,
maybe 40 minutes ago, and we've been sitting around in this boardroom in Wales chatting, and it was very, very good value.
He actually gave us 34-man squad.
Yes, done.
And captain, so, which we know, and we may tweet out or may not. I don't know. But you'll obviously have to review us first on iTunes.
Yeah, if we get 850,000 reviews overnight, we'll tell you. But it was, we're not doing that thing where it's say, hey, you know, we know something you don't know, and we had a great time and you weren't here, but we thought the interview was gone, and because he's a man in demand and he's very busy, clearly he would just scarper, but we have been in here for ages chatting, and
I'm actually quite surprised. He actually likes me, doesn't he?
He actually likes you. It was very, very good value, that.
Yeah.
Was, I mean, the interview, loved it. Really, really good.
So, anyway, mate, what are your thoughts on this weekend?
Well, I'm conscious this could be quite a long podcast after this, so we're going to do our best to keep this bit short.
It won't be, mate. It won't be. So, first game
Tom,
up.
That's code, because I want to go home soon. I'm really tired.
Scotland v Wales.
Yeah, so...
See, now, I see two teams off the back of a narrow defeat last week, both obviously going to be up for it, not just because it's the Six Nations, but because they want to prove a point after losing narrowly. Scotland, a few injuries. Greg Laidlaw's now out. Strauss is now out. This Welsh team, there's no injuries, full bill of health. And I think they will take a lot from that defeat against England. Yeah, it wasn't the greatest results for Wales. They were in it all the way, but I think they're a stronger team. They've won 9 on the bounce against Scotland. The last time they lost against Scotland in this competition was 2007. I was playing.
Well done.
Come off the bench.
Big day.
Yeah. But
should have started you. Wouldn't have lost.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. But they'll be full of confidence. Psychologically, they'll know they can go to Murrayfield and perform well. I'm not saying they're going to win by 15, 20 points, but they've got enough in that team to win. Money on, if you had any.
Scotland.
Why?
Well, I think Wales might struggle to get themselves back to where they were emotionally, in terms of arousal levels.
Can I just remind you where you are? You're at the Welsh training base.
Yeah, I just saw all the lads walking around.
There's cameras everywhere. This place is bugged like Big Brother, mate. You can't get away with anything.
Yeah, but yet. I just saw the lads walking around like a pack of zombies, just staring at iPhones and their flip-flops and didn't really see them. But
swiping to the right.
I'm going with a Scotland win, I'm going with an Ireland win, and I'm going with an England win. There you go. How about that?
Perfect. England, bonus point by half-time?
Yeah, bonus point at least. I think they'll go for it by half-time.
What do you reckon?
I'm commentating on that game, so I'm going to be a lot more neutral.
Brilliant,
when I'm doing that.
Brilliant. I love your commentary, mate.
Oh,
a lot
thanks,
of people
mate.
Love it.
Oh, thanks, great, mate.
Make sure, if you are listening to Flats, you only tweet positive messages.
Yeah. But I'm not going to check it. I don't check it for a couple of days afterwards, so.
And
so you can
tweet
some abuse if you like. I won't see it.
That was our incredibly informative Six Nations weekend chat. So, David Luke Flatman, can I call you that?
No.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, loads.
Go on. Give
got
us some.
One from Sam Wise, I'll decide, on email. Hey, chaps, love the relatively informative podcast. I'm taking that as an insult. My question is, with your media work, other commitments and family, do you ever get the time at the weekend to go down the pub and just watch a game on TV with a pint? If not, is it something you miss? Tommy?
Yeah, I do, because I don't work as many weekends as you. I'm in the media loads and loads,
so much,
but just not on TV. Do so much sort of vlogs, media and radio.
Tom Shanklin TV.
Yeah, but no, I do. I end up going down to watch Cardiff Blues fairly regularly with my mates, with the boys, sit back, relax. Don't end up watching that much of the rugby, just having a laugh.
Yeah.
Catching up when I can, clapping when there's tries, booing when there's penalties.
Yeah, cheer for whoever's winning, yeah. Yeah.
What about you, mate?
I don't ever get to go to the pub and watch a game of rugby. And the truth is, it's not something I miss because I never did it. And I like a drink, like I like going out with my mates and binge drinking UK style. I'm not a pop to the pub for three or four pints kind of bloke just because my dad never did it. I never did it. And if I watch rugby, I like to watch rugby differently from some supporters, maybe. I'd rather watch it on... So, for example, on Sunday at the AJ Bell, Sale against Wasps, I watched that in the media room, just Mark Durden-Smith and I sitting on our own in the media room watching on TV when there's a stadium outside, because we get to see all the angles, we get quiet, we get replays. And it's not that we sit there taking notes and analysing everything, I suppose we do a little bit, but that is how I enjoy watching rugby. I prefer that. And going to the pub, to be honest, I'd rather sit and watch it on TV than inside a stadium because I get to see more, and I'd rather watch it in a stadium than a pub. A pub is about the last place I would ever want to watch a game of rugby that I, about which I cared at all.
Just because people recognise you so much from the great work you've done on ITV4.
Are you Bob Hoskins?
And
oh, God, he died, actually. That's really bad.
They might not recognise your face, but all of a sudden they'll hear your voice. It's like Attenborough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got a question here from Dan Q. I'm not sure if you've answered this yet on Twitter or not. Just wondering who win a scrap between my two favourite rugby podcasts, Flats and Shanks and the Rugby Pod. Have we had that one before?
I think we might have had that one, but Jim, I said the difficulty we've got is that presumably I get paired off with Jim.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a boxing match, I probably lose that because he's from Coventry and he's 7 feet tall with really long arms, like an ape. But then he said to me, well, the issue he's got is that he's got sponge fists.
Okay.
So his hands might break / do no damage at all. You're against Goody. Now, you're freakishly strong, but Goody is really hard. People don't know that. But
is he?
Actually, yeah, he's really hard.
Really?
Yes. So,
okay.
It'd be a great fight. So what I'm doing now is I'm carrying weapons in case it ever does kick off so we can really, really hurt them and get it done quick.
Can I just say I'm sorry to Jerry O'Donovan and someone else actually on Twitter because I said The Guard, a film, is a British film. It's not actually. It is, in fact, an Irish film.
Okay. What did you say? It was Irish and it's British.
And
which one?
Dara Kelly. I said it's British, but it's actually Irish. So,
okay.
Sorry about that, lads.
All right. Well, you will. No, I mean, you're a major dick for doing that. Well done for apologising. Question here from Jamie Mills on email. What's your opinion, Shanks, on the dismal numbers going to watch the regions in Wales, and how do they get those numbers up and kind of hope to survive without people coming through the gates?
Well, I don't want to nose everyone off now, and I try and do answer as fast as I can. IMO now.
Yeah.
You know what that stands for?
Yeah.
Yeah, well done. Is that the quality's not there on the field, because a lot of our best quality is playing outside Wales. I firmly believe that if you want to play for Wales, the country, the national team, you should play in Wales and have a ruling similar to Australia, where you earn 40 or 50 caps playing in your country, playing for your country, and then you have you've got a choice of moving away. You've done your hard yards there. All the money that's been invested into you as a young player, as a young 20-year-old, you're getting the benefits in Wales. And what's going to make the league better is having better players in the league. You know, if you get the likes of Lee Halfpenny back, Jamie Roberts, Owen Williams, all these types of players, if you get them back playing, you know, more people are going to want to see them because they're big names. They make the games better. They make the team better. And at the moment, really quick example, through no fault of his own at all, he made the 100% right decision, because it was the only decision for him to make, really, is George North. You know, the money that was invested in him, it'd be great to see the Scarlets now benefiting from that. It's Northampton. So I think if you put the law in place for these players that they can go and play elsewhere, they can play in France and England and wherever, but they won't play for their national team. You know, it's a tough, tough decision, that. Yeah, don't fall asleep, mate. All right, any more questions before we sign off?
Yeah, this is Jerry O'Donovan on email. I'm reliably informed that the Ulster rugby team has a Bible class for God-fearing members of the squad. Don't know if that's true or not, but great if it is. Which team from your respective past, would be the least likely to have a Bible class, and why? And
I always remember at Saracens,
it's a good question,
we had Yanni De Beer. He came in for he probably came in for half a season, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yanni De Beer, the ex South African number 10.
Yeah.
Came to Saracens.
Dropped 5 goals against England in the quarterfinal in 99.
Yeah, England can take De Beer was the headline. But he had no ligaments, so both his knees were really heavily strapped.
Yeah, made of jelly.
And he tried to set up a Bible class in the team room, and he wanted Gerald Arasa to go there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how well it worked, but...
Sexual Arasa?
Yeah. The big G.
Sexual chocolate?
Yeah.
G-string?
Yeah.
I love G. We've done him on this podcast
before. Tonight, right?
You know you look good tonight, right?
That was his chart line.
But I remember being in Beer It. It was actually the trip when...
Stop it.
This is not going to sound funny, but at the time, we're checking into our rooms in Beer It, and we all got given a room number you're in, and you had to go and get your key from reception. They said, Shanks Flats, you're in 414. And they went to the reception, and you were like, yes, the key, please. And she's like, yes, which room? And you said, fur. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
For some reason, that really got me that. But anyway, we were doing something naughty in the room. There was four or five of us in dorms, weren't there? And I think we were on the phone, and we were chatting to some... Look, we're not trying to glorify this. We were young blokes, and we were on tour or whatever. So we were chatting to some naughty girl that one of the guys knew. And what we were doing was, there were four or five of us passing the phone to each other, pretending it wasn't a girl I knew, but say it was a girl I knew, everyone had to pretend to be me. So Shanks would get the phone and go, yeah, oh yeah, 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 just out here, Beer It's training, like that. That's how I talk.
And then, calves out.
Yeah, and then someone else would be like, get the phone, who was South African, and would do an impression of me. And we all had to try and pretend to be the same person, and it was genuinely hilarious. And Yanni, I walked out, I popped to the loo halfway through this call, I was laughing so much I needed a wee. And I walked out, and Yanni was on his bottom bunk bed in the hallway where he was sleeping, covering his ears, reading the Bible. I just felt so bad. I was like, Yanni,
I'm so sorry, mate.
And he's like, guys, why do you do this? I was like, sorry, Yanni, we're sorry. Right. We loved him, but it was bad.
One last question now, because we do have to go. Andrew Burton has put on Twitter, Saili has been cited for the tackle on Beck. Why wasn't this picked up at the time? For those who didn't see it, it was Munster versus the Ospreys. It was at the Liberty Stadium. Ashley Beck places the ball on the base of the corner flag for a try, goes to the TMO. The TMO says it's no try because the ball is based, it's been placed at the base of the corner flag, which actually is a try. now. Mm. It wasn't previously, it is now. But that's irrelevant because Ashley Beck's hand, other hand, was on the line as well.
Mm.
So it didn't make a difference. It wasn't a try. The touch, the TMO got the actual decision wrong in the fact that it was a try. But his left hand was on the touch, it wasn't try. But Saili goes to tackle Beck with no arms. Mm. Tom Haberfield, the captain, is on at the ref to say, can you check the tackle? Can you check the tackle? The ref doesn't check the tackle. It wouldn't have been a penalty try, but in my opinion, it certainly would be a yellow card. It's just poor officiating on my behalf.
On your behalf? In your opinion?
Yeah, both.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Just to play devil's advocate, which is a cop-out way of saying I disagree with you.
Just, yeah, it's another way of saying in my opinion.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so this is not my opinion. But what happens is, when a referee TMOs everything, we complain. When a referee makes strong decisions that are correct, we say that's good because he's not TMOing everything. He or she is not TMOing everything. Now and again, a referee is going to absolutely feel they've got it right and make a strong decision, and they're going to have it wrong. And that is the point at which supporters of that team and that team only complain that the referees don't use a TMO when it's there. So this problem is going to go on forever. You will never get consistency from referees until it is entirely automated.
I disagree, mate. I think if the referee had time to look at the video footage as well, Tom Haberfield's on at him about the tackle with no arms. It was pretty blatant. But anyway, that's the world we live in. We're all entitled to our own opinion, mate.
Yeah, and I mean, I just want to for the record, let the record state that I am extremely angry about this.
Okay, fine. Right. Well, there we are.
I'm really pumped with our chat with Warren Gatland. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely loved it.
What a top bloke. I didn't know him very well. He was at that Wasps dinner on Thursday night, and we had a beer, and he was really good company. I just didn't know him really before then. And now today, I feel like, you know, we might move in together.
It's great. No, he was on great form. We just have to now save up for the next year to pay him.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Well,
he did it because he loves me, basically.
Yeah.
And respects me very highly.
But you've kind of, he's got his money's worth out of you, hasn't he, already?
Yeah, no, we gathered that, yeah.
You paid him in grand slams, didn't you?
Yeah. Guilty. Stop it.
Shanks, by the way, said that in the car on the way over. I was like, do we have to pay Gats? Won't Gats want paying for this? And he's like, hey, I paid him in grand slams. Sick bellet.
Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Make sure you contact us on Twitter at Flats and Shanks via email, which is contact@flatsandshanks.com, on Facebook, Flats and Shanks. We forgot to take a photo of Warren Gatland and us.
Oh, shit.
Shoot. Never mind.
Shoot. Never mind.
Never mind.
Oh, that's so bad. All right. Lots of love, guys. Ta-da.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.